I'm Jeff Phelps. My buddy's Andy Baskin. Let's go to the fan hotline. He's been with us many times before. We love him. He does a great job covering Major League Baseball for CBS Sports. He's Mr. Mike Exisa. Hello, Mike.
Hey, Mike.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
I'm shocked, Mike. Four college hitters. Big guys who hit the ball. Somebody took over the Guardians draft room and didn't let the Guardians in. What was going on?
Yeah, you know, the Laviolette pick, I mean, you look coming into 2025, just like this draft season, he was a candidate to go number one overall, and he didn't have a great spring. I think he hit like 250, and if you're talking about a first-round college hitter, those guys usually hit like 350, 400, but it's huge power. It's the kind of power the Guardians just don't have like anywhere in their organization. A few months ago, getting this guy at the end of the first round was like unthinkable. It was kind of like the shot they had to take, and they've kind of gone for a power really with every pick, you know, beyond like the second round. It's like beyond my scope. I don't know too much about those kids, but I know they've gone hitter heavy, and you can't really draft for need, right? This is not like the NBA or the NFL where this guy's going to be on your roster next year. He's going to go into the minors for 2 or 3 years. And like, you don't know what's going to happen in 2 months. Predicting what you're going to need in 2 years is like impossible. But offense has been a challenge for the Guardians. It's been a challenge for several years now. And hitting the ball out of the park has been an issue. And you kind of look at even Chase DeLauder draft pick. They traded for Nolan Jones again because he can hit the ball out of the ballpark. It's something the Guardians need to do more. It's really hard to win games in 2025 without hitting the ball out of the park. So they're kind of gravitating that way. And whether it works out, I don't know. We're going to find out in a few years. But you can see the vision here, I think.
How do you feel about just the whole scouting staff for the Guardians at this point? I know it's just the beginning of the draft. But if you kind of look at them through the past couple of years and trying to see what's, you know, made its way up to the bigs, I'm just wondering what the perspective is, because, you know, I think when ownership changed, they put a big emphasis on, we are going to put money into the minors. We're going to put money into the minors and make these guys come out and that they're going to be ready for the bigs. Now, just give me your overall perspective on, you know, the Guardians front office and where the scouting staff is.
Yeah, I know within baseball, Cleveland's very highly regarded for their player development, especially on the pitching side. Like pitching, they're one of the top organizations, and maybe we haven't seen it quite as much the last few years, but I don't go back to whatever got Shane Bieber. I think it was fourth round pick, and he was nothing like the guy he was, nothing like what he became in college. Like, that was a major development win for them. You see what Gavin Williams has become, what they've done with Slade Ciccone this year. That's player development. Player development is not always draft this guy, go through the minors. Sometimes it's scouting the other team's players, getting him, tweaking him, and turning him into something. So, yeah, the hitter development is not great. You know, that they have trouble just kind of getting guys to hit the ball with authority. You know, you do have Stephen Kwan eventually. Some of those guys kind of pop up. But the hitter development is, I wouldn't call it one of the best in the game, but it is highly regarded with people within baseball talking to them. It's just they have a lot of respect for Cleveland for always being in contention despite, you know, not having high payrolls. And they do that largely because they get their players to the big leagues. They scout really well other teams, and they make those players better that they get. So they're very highly regarded, even though I know it can be frustrating watching this team on the field like not be able to score a run during a 10-game losing streak. I know what that's like, but they are, Def, I'm telling you, they're very highly regarded around the game.
What about when it comes to a power hitter? What's it been, Mike? Is it the philosophy of the team that they just go in a different way, bat to ball, you know, just trying to make contact, put the ball in play? Have they not been able to develop these kind of guys, or you know?
Yeah, I think it's obviously multiple factors, right? It's never one thing. I think they have put an emphasis on bat to ball ability, and they haven't had a ton of power in their organization. I think some guys that we've seen come up, whether it's John Kinsey Noel or Oscar Gonzalez a few years ago, like they showed power in the minors, but there was always some kind of swing and miss concerns there. They would chase a lot, and they came up, had that initial burst of success, and while that was happening, you kind of looked under it and said, I'm not sure how long this is going to last, and it didn't last for them. But I think it's a combination of just, okay, we aren't frustrating the bat-to-ball ability because you just look at the game today, there's so many strikeouts. It's just really hard to get the bat on the ball now. The pitching is just so good now, and they haven't had a ton of power in the minors. That hasn't been their priority. And that's clearly shifting now the last few years. And they're kind of taking the approach that, like, well, we're not going to be able to teach these guys to hit the ball out of the ballpark. We can maybe teach them to get the bat on the ball. So let's kind of, you know, kind of zig when we've been zagging for so long. But, yeah, there's definitely a priority there on just, okay, first and foremost, get the bat on the ball. That's what we want our guys to do, with Kwan being, like, the main guy there. That's, like, the big development win for them. And, yeah, so it's been prioritized bat and ball. We haven't had a ton of power hitters come up through the minors, and kind of shifting now. But it looks like they are kind of prioritizing just the ability to get the ball out of the ballpark now.
You know, they had the 10-game losing streak. Then they came back. They won, what, six of their last seven. And the last in their last two losses, they came down to, like, one play in those games. And, you know, a gigantic sweep over Houston to kind of set the tone going into the break here. They're sitting at 4.5 back. Are they buyers or sellers? And history, to me, makes me think that they don't go for it. But could they go for it?
Yeah, I think they're 4.5 back. I think there's, like, six teams ahead of them in the wild card race. That's tough, you know, if you have to jump two or three.
Yeah, but the thing about it is, I mean, the Royals are only a half game. They're even with the Royals. They're a half game behind the Angels, the Twins, and they're a full game back in the Rangers. I mean, in 2-3 days, they could, I mean, I'm being totally optimistic, right, they could jump into that spot behind the Rays.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm just saying, when you have to jump that many teams, it's a lot. Because, like, you know, you have six teams ahead of you, two or three of them are going to win every night. You know, that's just the way it is. So, I think that what we've seen in just the third wild card spot is really kind of taking some of the starch out of the trade deadline. Because, like, nobody really wants to sell anymore. Every team thinks they're in it. You've seen a lot of teams kind of buy and sell at the same time, where they'll kind of ship somebody out, bring in somebody else to replace them. And I can see that maybe being a path for Cleveland, where maybe they don't go all in and buy, but they don't tear it down and sell either. I mean, I don't see a reason to do that. I think I'm not really even sure who they would move if they decide to trade somebody, but I think they're more likely to add than they are to subtract. And the additions they do make would be guys who are going to be around for a few years. You know, I don't think they're going to trade a bunch of prospects for rentals. That might not be the best idea, but I could see them moving players out to get somebody who could be around for 2 or 3 years for sure. I can't see them just kind of selling and kind of throwing in the towel. That's just something the Guardians never really do. They haven't done that in a very long time. And you look at the roster, I mean, I could see this team contending next year. I know the Tigers are set up pretty well, but three wild card spots, I mean, why can't they make a run for it next year? I think they're more likely to add than they are to subtract for sure.
Mike Exisa joining us from CBS Sports. Guardians actually added two more hitters from college in their first two picks here on day number two. That makes me think about something that Andy and I talked about last week. You know, if you're going to move one guy and look for a haul in return, Emmanuel Clase might be the guy you could move if you're interested in moving your closer who's under great team control. But we thought you're going to move him for power hitting prospects, Mike, who are, you know, either close to major league ready or are here already. Well, they've just loaded up on that. That makes me wonder.
You just got to remember that the kids they're drafting today are multiple years away. If there's a chance to trade Class A for a major league outfielder who's ready right now, that's something worth pursuing. I wouldn't look at the draft having much impact on their deadline approach. And Class A would be, you know, because you do have the bullpen's really good. You know, you got Hunter Gaddis and Kate Smith. It's like, if you trade Class A, it's not like you're giving up in the league innings. You're still pretty well set there. And, you know, teams always want bullpen help at the trade deadline. It's not like you put Class A out there with that contract. And even though he's not been quite as automatic this year as he was last year, there's going to be like a bidding war for him. And I think that would be the guy to move if you really want to get something significant in return. If you really want to add a young player to the offense who's going to move the needle for you and not just be like a new number seven hitter, Class A would be the guy to move. And, you know, would it be unpopular? Yeah. Would it be in the best interest of the team? Sure. You know, they're not going to trade Jose Ramirez, nor should they. And Class A is kind of your next bet to kind of really make a difference there. You know, Guardians are so good with pitching, whether it's promoting from within, finding guys in other organizations that they could survive that hits the bullpen moving forward. And that's something I would at least explore. I definitely wouldn't say no. If you got to at least listen, right? If teams call you, ask about Emmanuel Clase, you're this far out of the postseason, of a postseason spot with that many teams ahead, you got to at least listen. And yeah, I could see a situation where they trade Class A for somebody they could put in their lineup right away, not necessarily single A kids who are 3 years away from the big leagues. That would really surprise me if they just trade them for prospects.
Mike, last question. Just I saw you had a story on it too. It was something that definitely caught my eye as and Guardians / Indians fans. Terry Francona getting his 2,000th win. Just your thoughts and reflections on him becoming just the 13th manager to do that in MLB history.
You know, it surprised me because I thought he got there already. I'm kind of surprised he's been he's been around for so long and he had so much success, especially once he got to Boston and then to Cleveland. His teams are always good, and I was surprised he came back this year because of the health issues. And so I'm just, good for him. Finally just getting there. 2,000 managers, only 2,000 wins, only 13 managers have gotten there. He's going to be a Hall of Famer with there's going to be no opposition to that, right? As soon as he's eligible, he'll sail in. And, baseball doesn't have many really great like characters anymore, and sure. But he's one of he's certainly one of them. So I was happy to see him come back and just be a breath of fresh air amongst these managers who, you listen to them talk and there's just nothing interesting coming out of their mouths now. And he's certainly a bit of a throwback in that regard. So congratulations to him.
That's a great point.
Mike, thank you very much.
Thanks,
as always, Mike. We really appreciate your time and your expertise. I'm Jeff Phelps. My buddy's Andy Baskin. Just for giggles, before Menegan pops a blood vessel.
Yeah.
Guy named Luke Hill, third baseman, second baseman from Mississippi, who was at Arizona State, drafted by the Guardians.
Mm-hmm.
And he's 6'1", 200. But he does have second base on his little bio here. It says third base, second base. And then a guy named Riley Nelson, great big strapping, 6'3", 222-pound first baseman from Vanderbilt. So they're loading up on college hitters, Andy. Safety in numbers.
Jeff, were you in some sort of draft fantasy pool or something?
No.
You are really, really into it.
You know why?
Thank God this team
does not have any. Say it again, please.
They don't have any heavy hitters?
There you go. And now they're loading up on guys who might be able to hit the ball. So good. We'll see. We'll see what happens there. But I like it. Good for them. Those guys aren't going to be here soon enough to help out. Although I saw one story that said somebody drafted might make it up as a closer already this year with somebody.
Yeah? Tell me about it.
I don't even remember who it was. And that's where I agree with Dan. So, okay, great.
It is weird. Dan, I will say this. Jeff has done a very nice job of being the leader on this draft coverage. And
you're dragging you two guys along?
No. I'm kind of in the middle.
You're in the middle. You're definitely in the back seat. Dan's in the trunk.
Yeah, normally.
And he's Mr.
The problem is that you are Mr. Boring baseball stuff.
Nobody cares.
That's what I think half the time.
Riley Nelson out of Vanderbilt, his exit velocity is just so stunning.
It's
the best exit velo we've seen in the SEC.
Oh, man, I can't wait. Phelps, what's your war? I heard you were playing Pinochle the other day. What's your war?
First of all, nobody cares. Second of all, nobody cares. Third of all, no one gives a flying what.
Careful.
Jeff? Say it. Come on.
They also took a pitcher from Oregon State. So there you go.
First of all, nobody cares. Second of all, nobody cares. Third of all, no one gives a flying what.
I do think it's interesting, though, of the eight guys they've drafted, six of them have been hitters from college. That's
okay.
Let's just leave it at that.
You want something more interesting?
Yeah, 6 out of 7 wins going into the All-Star break after in the previous 10 games. Now all of a sudden, they're not out of the conversation.
The next 5 series for the Guardians are all against teams under 500.
Bad teams.
The next 5, A's, Baltimore, Kansas City,
us.
Colorado, Minnesota. I don't want them to trade.
Scratch Minnesota off that list.
Well, they're under 500.
Yeah, but it's Minnesota.
Under 500.
They always have a good series with Minnesota.
I don't care. They're under 500. They fit my paradigm.
Wow. Andy learned a new word.
I told you how I learned paradigm. I was a budding
young... You were looking for a pair of nickels?
No,
you
didn't budding young journalist in Columbus, Ohio. We had a longtime station manager that was outstanding. They brought in someone from a very small market, and he gave us a half-hour lecture about changing your paradigm, and then proceeded to show us video of the original Lions games. And I'm talking about the real Lions and how you could get just tossed to the Lions if you didn't want to change your paradigms. So that's how I know about
it. And Lions are eating.
Yes. Yeah.
That's good management right there. Fearless leader, get on that.
We can't need be videos. Afraid to change. Can't be afraid to change. I'm okay with that. I just don't need to see that. So
point.
I have no faith in the front office to make a move to make this team better as far as picking up a bat.
Do they need to?
They do. They need another bat. You can't go into a game every game, especially when you get into these teams over 500 with only two guys that are actually hitting. Two and a half.
Kyle Manzardo's back, baby.
I hope so.
I'm not making fun of that either.
No, I mean, he's had a rough week, man.
Well, he has, but Andy... I don't want him out of the lineup.
I'm not talking about baseball either, folks.
I don't want him out of the lineup.
Having experienced what he had to experience, it is not, you know, to watch a loved one go through a transplant is not fun.
Don't take him out of the lineup.
Just leave him in there. Let him go. Yeah.
Let him hit. Let him go.
I'm good.
Same thing with Nolan Jones. He's been hitting better. Leave him alone. Let him play. Righty, lefty, I don't care. Put him out there. This team might have found something, might have stumbled upon something. I do think that and yesterday it worked. I'll give them credit. But the constant lefty-righty switch-it-up thing, it gets me a little bit. Yesterday, I don't know if you noticed, first of all, by the way, in the 10th inning, Jonathan Rodriguez came to the plate, and I'm looking, I'm like, Guardians colors are dark blue and red and white. Why are you wearing a yellow undershirt?
You worry about these things. I don't worry about it.
I wasn't worrying. I just thought, that's interesting. I don't think I've ever seen a Guardian wearing a yellow undershirt before. But he was. But then, this I kind of get this. He pinch hit Brian Rocchio. They pinch hit David Fry for Rocchio in the 10th inning. And I get it. They were going lefty-righty completely. Rocchio, 122 average against lefties, and they brought in a lefty, even though Rocchio's he can swing from both sides. But he was hitting 122 against lefties. Fry hit a really hard ball at third base that went off Colson Montgomery's leg, and it did advance the runner, so it worked. But the fact that Rocchio was 2-for-3 in the game and swinging the bat pretty well didn't factor in. Okay, it worked, so that's good. I don't want to see the platoons. If you have a guy who is swinging a good bat, do not take him out of the lineup. If he's in the lineup, don't pinch hit for him. And if he's not in the lineup, why? Why? This team needs as much offense as it can get right now. And the only thing that I have had any kind of even question about with Steven Vogt is, man, you're platooning, but the guys you're platooning, you know, you're replacing one guy who can hit and has been hitting with a guy who's not, just based on the arm that the starting pitcher is throwing with. Look at your own guys. Is this guy doing the job for you? Then leave him in there. And I think that'll help him here in the second half.
All right, so let me point out two things here. One,
please do.
The next five series, again, I said, are against teams under 500. Okay? So if we go back to the, would you call it wedging theory? Just go out there and win every series? Or is it just baseball theory?
Wedging theory.
I mean, Eric Wedge used to say it all the time. That's why I call it wedging theory. But, right, just go out and win every series. Okay? If they go out and win every series.
Wedging.
Is it fair? Can I do this? Can I project?
Dan used to give those in high school.
True. Hey, Warman, can I project a little bit on this? Is it fair to do this or is it wrong? Because it's baseball.
Do whatever the hell you want.
Well, I'm just asking.
What's with him today?
He's grumpy, man. Can we get you some? You need a hug or something?
No.
Jeff will give you one. I'll give you a hug. I would never give you one.
I do appreciate that.
You're welcome.
So let's just say they go out and they win the next five series, which I don't think is crazy.
Hug.
I don't know that normally happens, but let's just say they do. They end up going, they'll be 11-5 in the next five series. And that would be against Baltimore. They have a four-game series, so that's, I would say, 3-1, right? Because otherwise it's tie. You don't want that. So that would take you to 57-54, and that would get you – doesn't that seem weird that it would only get you to three games over 500? But, yeah, I guess so. And I wonder where that would put you as far as wild card ranking. So, again, you want to be over 500 to kind of get into that world. And Tampa's three games over 500 right now. Because when you go to the Rangers, like that's what I keep saying. Like, forget about – I know that I was probably one of the first people to go, I mean, you got to jump six teams to get there. But it's not – it doesn't really feel that way. Again, two of the teams that you'd have to jump, you're going to play significantly here in the second half. That's the Royals and Twins. You must win against them if you really want to get back into this thing. And I think, you know, the Angels, perhaps the Rangers – in Tampa, you could pass them. That's really it's really the three teams there, because I think jumping the AL Central teams can be natural. It's the other teams that aren't. And so how are you going to get there to get up to where Seattle is, where they're six games over 500 right now? And they've got that last playoff spot. And doesn't it feel like we're late in the season for the All-Star game? It feels like we're exceptionally late. There's only, what, 60-some games left.
Usually when it happens, though.
No, well, I mean, like, but we normally think of the All-Star game being around 81, right?
No, it's usually.
I know, but it's
usually
just,
about 60%.
I feel like we're a week later on everything right now.
That's because the seasons are changing.
You think that's why?
Yeah. Hoynsie had a story out that I think it plays into exactly what we're talking about. According to sources that Hoynsie's talking with, the Guardians have told teams they're not going to trade Emmanuel Clase or Cade Smith.
Well, if that's the case, then. They're in with what they've got.
Now, let me ask you, though, do you believe that, or is that just posturing? And if the phone rings and it's the kind of offer you can't refuse, they'd trade those guys.
Which one are you going to give up, Jeff?
I don't want to give up either one.
First of all, Clase is going to bring in a much bigger return. Right. But
it would be Clase for that reason and that reason only.
But you could convince a team that Smith is the future. And somewhere down the road,
you're not going to get.
Yeah, I just don't think the return's going to be. You'd have to find a sucker.
Yep, you're right. Either a sucker or somebody who knows what they're doing. Cade Smith looks good. Clase being as good for as long as he's been and under team control for three more years at really reasonable salaries makes him incredibly attractive to another team. And I would think that before we get to the trade deadline, Chris Antonetti is going to get more than one phone call that makes him think, let me get back to you. And he and Mike Chernoff and their staff, they're going to sit around and they're going to say, all right, this is what they're offering. Do we want to do this? Because we have him here for 3 years and he's as good as you get at his position. And you usually excel when you collect the most good players. Do we want to do this? And Mike Exisa made a great point, and he's right. You don't let what you're doing in the draft, which isn't going to be for next year or this year, you know, affect what you're going to do when it comes to the trade deadline. But all of a sudden, folks, you have an organization that's loading up on college hitters. College hitters mean two things. Not as raw as high school guys, more projectable, as they say in the biz, and less far away timeline-wise. Might affect what they're thinking next year. I agree with Exisa. I don't think it's affecting what they're thinking at the trade deadline right now. It's Baskin and Phelps here on The Fan.